My name is Cupid Valentino, the modern day Cupid, and I just want to say one thing. Happy Valentine's Day.
Every day the 14th.
I don't think y'all heard me. I just want to say Happy Valentine's Day.
Every day the 14th.
Can y'all dig?
Hey, and welcome to another edition of the SoxProspects.com podcast. Coming at you from the snowy northeast in tax-free Salem, New Hampshire. I'm Chris Hatfield, and I'm joined today also in the snowy northeast by Mr. Matthew Hegel. Matt, hello.
Hey, Chris. Good to be on. How's it going?
Just, you know, lots of white stuff outside. And escaping from the snowy northeast and plying his trade across the pond in England is our very own Ian Kundle. Welcome, Ian.
Thanks, Chris. It's good to be here. It's a beautiful 50 degrees outside, and it is not raining for the first time in a while, so it's quite nice.
Lucky you. Lucky you. Yeah, we are recording this after the Northeast has been buried by another ridiculous snowstorm, and I'm frankly getting very sick of it.
Polar America.
Polar America. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, we have a great episode for you guys today. We're going to be joined by ESPN insider Keith Law, continuing our... I guess at this point it's a series of our prospect ranking series. Keith relatively recently released his top 10 prospects in the Red Sox system on ESPN Insider, as well as his top 100 prospects list. And before we have him on, actually, we're going to run down that list just so we don't really have to waste a lot of time talking to him, recounting what he already knows, which is his own list. So... he ranked the Red Sox as the number 5 system in baseball, and his top 10 obviously had Xander Bogaerts at the top, ranked as the number 2 prospect in baseball. Number 2 was Henry Owens, who he ranked number 42 in baseball. And then the next 4 guys all clustered between 51 and 61 on his top 100 list, and that's Jackie Bradley Jr., Garin Cecchini, Blake Swihart, and Mookie Betts, who I think he might be the high man on Betts. At number 7, he had Matt Barnes, who was the last Red Sox in the top 100 at number 89. He had Alan Webster at number 8, who Webster made his just missed. And he has said that if he went another 10 or 20 on his top 100, Webster probably would have been in there. He had Anthony Renato at 9, Trey Ball at 10. And then he's also said that Christian Vasquez would have been number 11 for him. And I believe Manuel Margot, who he had as his sleeper on the top 10, would have been number 12. He also said a bunch of other stuff, so if you're an ESPN insider, make sure you check that out. But we're going to talk to Keith. Should be an interesting conversation. I know I'm excited to have him on. You may remember him as the guy who first said that Michael Bowden wasn't going to be an ace, causing quite a stir on the Sox prospects forum, which in hindsight he nailed.
Nailed that one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good call.
Yeah, yeah. So we're excited to talk to Keith. So I think that's about it for an intro. Let's segue right into our interview. So after a short musical interlude, we'll be talking with Keith Law. All right, and we're now joined by ESPN insider, top chef and board game enthusiast, and a man who makes me crave apple pie every time he tweets, Mr. Keith Law. Keith, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you taking the time on this snowy Thursday.
It's not like I was going out today.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So we've already recounted your top 10, and actually you've said who 11 and 12 would have been on your list, as well as the Red Sox guys who made your top 100. So those are kind of out there. But I actually just realized before we start, why don't we tell people where they can read your stuff? We said you're on ESPN Insider, you're on Twitter at Keith Law, you've got the Behind the Dish podcast, which you know, don't stop listening to ours to listen to that, but listen to both. you've also got The Dish at metalparty.com. That it? I mean, that's not that much going on for you, but...
That's it. I've been doing some board game reviews for Pace Magazine lately, and that's just kind of as new titles come out. I link to everything. If people follow me on Twitter or my Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/KeithLawWriter, I try to post links to everything I do in both places. just so that, you know, sometimes like the chats, for example, on ESPN.com are not super easy to find. So I make sure to throw the links on both places so that people who just want to get directly to it have the links. And like I said, I try to do them on both of those. I even use Google Plus just to make sure nobody gets left out.
Wow.
Three people still using Google Plus, I am on there.
One of the few.
The only thing Google has pretty much ever screwed up, I think we can, or not the only thing, but one of the few. But anyway, well, beautiful. So yeah, Keith's everywhere. Make sure you follow his stuff. And I guess just to kind of lead off, Keith, you mentioned that the Red Sox system ranked fifth in the game for you. And I was just wondering, you know, you did kind of talk about your rankings a little bit on your podcast, but at least with the, was it fourth or fifth? I had it as fifth.
I'm looking at the top tens. It says fourth. But
oh, fourth.
I don't know.
Okay. I screwed up.
I think there's actually a discrepancy. Just looking
okay,
at
Keith, where are they for you? Let me just ask you while we're arguing what you think.
What I think about where
yeah,
I rank
where, do they rank for you? Because I thought I'd had it written down as fifth.
It's funny because I actually just pulled up the top tens and it says fourth there. Is there actually a discrepancy there? That's an excellent question. It would not be my fault because that's my editor's doing. They're fifth on the top ten on the overall ranking.
Okay.
How about that?
Okay, that's what I thought.
My editor's going to get fired for this.
It's all right. It's all right.
We'll roll.
Yeah. Don't.
They're four. They rank 4.5 for me.
Okay, that works. Well, I guess that kind of leads me to my question relative to those other kind of top five systems, which is kind of your usual suspects: Astros, Twins, Cubs, and Pirates, I believe. Relative to those systems, what do you see as the relative strengths and weaknesses of the Sox system? You know, they don't have two blue chippers like the Twins, say, or they don't have the plethora of hitting guys that the Cubs do. But, you know, relative to those other systems, what do you see as the for the Sox?
I think they have tremendous depth overall. Just a lot of guys who project to be average big leaguers or fringy big leaguers or who project to be back of the rotation starters or better. I'm just saying guys who meet that at least that minimum threshold. Guys who, because sometimes we get caught up in saying, well, he's a big leaguer. I mean, a big leaguer could be a guy who comes up for 2 weeks and then he's officially, he's got the tattoo. He's a big leaguer. I'm saying guys who project to be something more than that. Guys who look like they'll generate positive value at the major league level. Might only be for a couple of years, but the Red Sox probably rival the Astros for the organization with the most prospects who would meet that threshold. Guys who I think will not just get to the big leagues, but actually do something, produce some positive value there. And they're really deep, I think, in starting pitching prospects, maybe as deep as anybody in baseball, which is obviously if you want to be deep in something, you feel more comfortable if you're deep in up the middle position player prospects. But all the same, you do want to have starting pitching depth because I don't think the Red Sox, even though they have more money, they don't want to go out and dabble in free agent starters any more than clubs with lower payrolls do. I think it's just universal in the industry where teams are looking at free agent starters as bad values. You don't want to have to go out and give Balto Jimenez 4 years and $15 million a year if you don't have to. That's something you do because you haven't generated the starting pitching from your own system. And I think that's a big part of the Red Sox philosophy, particularly trying to draft guys like Matt Barnes, who's not an ace. I don't think anybody ever thought he'd be a one or a two, but could he be a really good number three starter and a guy who generates, he pitches like a $15 million pitcher but does it for $500,000 a year. You'd rather have those guys coming out of your own system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely seems to be a philosophy since Ben Cherington took over, especially when they kind of got away from that whole feeding the monster philosophy that kind of took over before Theo Epstein left. So, yeah, that does make a lot of sense. Matt, I know you'd wanted to ask something.
Well, I mean, yeah, following up on that, on Matt Barnes specifically, you had him at 89 on the top 100, which was fairly high relative to maybe some other rankings. I know you mentioned that you maybe thought he could be even higher with, I know you're impressed with the swing and miss ability with his fastball, which is pretty rare with a prospect. What exactly, I mean, can you expand upon that, that with the fastball and what else do you see in him that could potentially, lead him to fulfill his ceiling as a number three or higher?
It's funny. I saw Barnes, I'll go back a little bit. First time I saw him, he was a freshman in college. I just ran into him. I was on doing stuff on the Cape, mostly looking at other guys, and just sort of ran into him. So who the hell is this guy? He was sitting 94, 95 in the first inning and managed to hold most of that velocity. It was a short start, but he held most of that velocity for the outing. So I guess they wrote him down as a, you know, name to remember. Delivery wasn't great. Secondary wasn't great. But still, he was a big kid with arm strength. And I had never heard of him before. So that automatically made him interesting. And then over the next couple of years, I'd say maybe over the next 2 years, it was he would show flashes of being a lot better. You'd see him on the right day, and the curveball would suddenly be sharper, or the delivery just repeated a little better. It was never beautiful. But the last time I saw him before he was drafted, he'd backed off the curveball. He'd added a slider that was terrible, and he was not commanding the fastball anywhere near as well. And his performance that junior year, going into his junior year, actually had him ranked higher than Hulkson, higher than Bauer, because I thought he had more potential. And then he just kind of had a weaker junior year, and those guys obviously took huge steps forward. They ended up being the second and third picks in the draft. Now here we are a couple of years afterwards, and it's all kind of reversed back to the way it was after their sophomore years, where Barnes, well, for one thing, he stayed healthy. He's held all his velocity. The Red Sox have done a nice job, I think, just cleaning up the delivery enough that he can repeat it. Where now it's a guy with deception in his delivery. Hitters don't pick up the fastball, and who can just repeat it enough that really commands the fastball well in the strike zone, which is an unusual thing. But probably very few guys on my top 100 where I could even say that about them. Yes, they can get swings and misses on the fastball because hitters don't pick it up. And because they're throwing strikes, but they're throwing strikes kind of where they want to within the zone, not getting too much into sort of the sweet spot for any particular hitter, which I think really sets him apart from other guys who have a similar package with plenty of velocity, but not necessarily a knockout swing and miss secondary pitch, which I think is a fair description of Barnes. There's 50 guys in the minors who would fit that description, but I like Barnes more than most of those other guys. One, because he's just had results. He missed bats in the minors. It's at least a positive sign. And I can fully understand how he's doing it. And I think that's a formula that's going to continue to translate even as he gets to the big leagues. If you can locate your fastball and hitters don't pick it up, you will probably still continue to get swings and misses on that once you get to the big leagues. And to answer the last part of your question, how can he even fulfill that potential, sort of reach the ultimate ceiling? Secondary stuff could get better. The Red Sox have done a nice job, as I said, just kind of cleaning up the delivery enough that he can repeat it. And if they can get more consistency, I think with the release point on the breaking ball, it was much better at the end of 2013 than it was at the beginning of 2013. There could be more. I would not rule it out. And based on my history with Barnes and also the history of the Red Sox, who I think have done a very nice job on the player development side, and particularly I think getting more value out of pitching prospects over the last 5 to 10 years.
And speaking of pitching prospects, a couple guys who aren't on the top 10 that at least one of them has definitely graduated, and I'm going to ask if the other one has as well, but Ruby De La Rosa has graduated, and Brandon Workman, I'm assuming, are you going with the service time cutoff as well for your guys?
I use rookie of the year eligibility. Okay. So it's the 50 innings pitch, the 45 days on the 25-man roster, or for a hitter, 130 at-bats.
Okay.
It's just easier this way, because I don't like ranking a guy who's then not rookie of the year eligible, and then then next year, well, why didn't you vote for Brandon Workman for rookie of the year? Why do you hate the Red Sox?
Right.
Yeah, no, those are not, they're not my rules. I'm sorry, but I can't make up my own rules.
Yeah, of course. No, that makes sense. So I guess what I was going to ask is kind of relative to maybe not necessarily where they would rank number-wise, because that might take a little more thought than we have time for here, but you know, where maybe in that group of pitching guys, we've talked about Barnes, but there's Webster and Renato also in the upper minors. Owens maybe a little behind them in terms of development, but maybe ahead of them in terms of status. Where do those two guys rank among those guys, and what do you see as kind of reasonable projections for them of what they could do in the majors?
So Workman, for me, is probably behind that whole crop. He'd be behind, but the end of my top 10 was thinking in order, Webster, Renato, and then Trey Ball, who's obviously forever away, but I think a really high ceiling. I'm a sucker for a good athlete on the mound. And I think Workman's behind those guys because he's probably a reliever in the big leagues. He could be a fifth starter, a little above replacement level. I think he'll probably be more valuable in a major league role, not just for the Red Sox, but for just about anybody, as a reliever. I think he's primarily going to be a two-pitch guy and could be very good in that role for several years. De La Rosa, kind of want to throw up my hands because you've seen probably just as much as I've seen from him. He's not a pure at this point. He'll show you huge stuff. You want to go in and say he's a potential number one starter, but really since the surgery, he's not been close to what he looked like he was going to be. And anybody who's missed, I mean, this is, it's not quite a Rodis Vizcaino territory or Manny Benuelos, two guys who've basically missed 2 years with Tommy John surgery. But when enough time goes by and it's not all the way back health-wise or stuff-wise or command-wise, eventually you get to the point where you say, maybe he is a reliever just for health reasons, nothing to do with stuff or size or potential, but maybe he's at least got to come back as a reliever for a while before we can revisit whether he can be a starter. And the nice thing for the Red Sox is they have the luxury of all of these other starter candidates, where it wouldn't shock me at all if they tried to bring De La Rosa up to the big leagues at some point in a relief role, just to say, he can't handle that many innings right now. Let's extract some value from him in the short term while we still try to figure out how to get him back to where he was before he'd had the surgery, because it was a huge fastball and he'd splash at least a plus changeup. You know, his command was a question, breaking ball was a question. He was a baby. I mean, I love those guys because you can totally dream on them. There's enough present stuff that you can fall in love with what you see, but they have the age and the size where you can almost project anything you want onto them for the long term. And I thought he was incredibly exciting. I first ran into him, I think he was a minor league spring training game in Glendale. Ooh, there was one scout there. And I'm looking at my gun, like, is it right? I mean, I'm throwing it's 94, 95. And then I realized all the other Latin pitchers were sitting on the benches. You know what those are like on the backfields there. Mm. And they're all kind of looking at me, asking me what the number said. And I thought, well, they know he's good, right? They're telling me that he's actually something. And and then it turned out he was electric. Well, a year later, he was hitting 99 in spring training. So,
well, and he had that first stint with the Dodgers too, where he came up as a starter and was kind of, you know. But then when he needed the Tommy John, that kind of brought that to a halt.
You know, it's we and I say we, I'm including myself in this too. We all fall into the trap. So it's like, well, it's Tommy John. It's not the worst thing in the world. Obviously, better than a shoulder operation. But some guys don't really come back. The velocity occasionally doesn't come back. Often the health just isn't there. But I mentioned this guy, you know, Benuelos. It's two lost years at this point where, at best, you're saying, well, there might be relievers in the short term, but you don't know. We still don't know. Neither one of those guys has actually made it back in any significant part of time, amount of time. So how could you look at them and say, well, they're still starters. They're still potentially high-ceiling prospects. Now you're just, if you're in the front office, you're saying, well, hey, I hope he throws 80 innings in some role this year, as opposed to it right after the surgery where you're thinking, well, it's 12 to 15 months, and we'll get him back in the rotation and just kind of massage the innings back up. Occasionally, you know, 10% of the time, it doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How about one more each, Matt?
On Garen Cecchini, one comment you made that generated some discussion is that he has the downside of a Bill Miller type career. And obviously we sort of remember Bill Miller's Red Sox years, which were sort of his peak, his best years. But
yeah.
What
that one year where he was like
the batting title,
like Brooks Robinson, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, can you sort of explain that comment and sort of what kept him from being rated? He was like 53 on your top 100. Mm-hmm. What kind of kept him from being rated even higher in light of that sort of downside, which sounds very good?
So I'll answer them in reverse order. Just to give your listeners a sense of some of the process too. I talked to at least one person in every organization about their own systems. I talk to as many pro scouts as I can. I go and see a bunch of players myself over the course of every year. I've seen Garen quite a bit, actually dating back to when he was a rising senior. And then I put together, after all of that, I put together my own sort of draft top 100 and send it around to a bunch of pro scouting directors, assistant GM types across baseball, guys I trust who I know have a handle on what's going on across the minors, and I get their feedback. And often I'll get three or four people who will all say the same thing, move this guy up, move this guy down. Cecchini was a funny one where it was a split camp. And so he kind of ended up right where I had him in the first place because some people said move him up and some people said move him down. There's not enough upside there. You know, I think the positives and the comments that came back from these directors or similar types were that he's got just tremendous feel to hit, that he's going to hit for a high enough average, just the pure hit tool is going to be so high that any other deficiencies in his game, well, they might keep him from being a superstar, are not enough to really worry about. That he was one of the guys with the highest pure hit tools of anybody on the top 100. The people who came back with sort of more negative views were, you know, does he really stay at third base? He's not a great third baseman. He's not a great runner, although I will say he's a tremendous instinctive base runner, but just pure running speed is not great. He's not going to hit for a ton of power. That's the sort of the consensus coming back. I know the Red Sox internally think there will be more power. Just sort of the mentality when you're making that much hard contact, eventually you will maybe just sort of fluke into 15 to 20 homers in some of your better years. And I think I'm more inclined to lean with the optimists on this one because I do think he's got outstanding feel for hitting. I love players who show that kind of instinct. I've talked to Gary too about base running and about sort of his, you know, the science of base running as he approaches it, which I found incredibly impressive for a kid that young to be able to break down his approach to reading pitchers and understanding situations as well as he could. So it's more, yeah, it's nice that he can steal some bases, but the same fantasy here, it's, what's the real baseball implication of this? It's that this kid's just got incredible aptitude for the game overall. And those are guys I generally like to bet on when they show him some tools, but also show that kind of intelligence, that kind of instinct for the game. Those are players I tend to sort of like to throw my lot in with. I think that, you know, when I made the Bill Miller comp, I was saying guy hits for a lot of average, doubles power, probably doesn't generate huge home run totals. Chikini may steal more bases, but he's not a great runner. Now, obviously, neither was Miller even before the knees started to bother him. Miller was probably a somewhat better defender, but I think Aaron is, again, bright enough and a hard enough worker that he'll make himself a perfectly capable defender at third. People who are trying to move him off the position are probably just looking at the physical abilities and not adequately considering what he brings to the mental side of the game.
Beautiful. And then if you've got time for one more, Keith, Ian, you want to get a question in?
Yeah, I was just going into looking ahead to this season. Is there anyone other – I mean, you mentioned Manuel Margot as your sleeper for the system. Is there anyone else that you think could take that step forward and maybe jump into the top 10 or even potentially the top 100 next year who's not in the top 10 right now?
Sure. I mean, he's – and I will say Margot, too. That he was somebody I mentioned going into last season, too. I just know the Red Sox people really love him, and the few scouts I talked to who have experience with him say it. Kid's got tremendous potential. It's just – entirely in front of him at this point. You know, Rafael Devers, I couldn't possibly rank him. I think he's still 16, might have turned 17 in the interim. It's just huge raw power potential there. I don't love ranking guys that young so aggressively, especially when they have virtually no pro experience. But, you know, everyone I've talked to, it's a good swing. He actually, in the instructs, was facing some older pitching. And it's funny, a lot of teams do scout instructs fairly heavily, and they were very impressed that Devers, for a 16-year-old, looked more like a 19 or 20-year-old out there, had no problem facing guys throwing harder, guys who could at least change speeds on him. Yeah, it was instructs, but a 16-year-old can look completely overmatched in that kind of environment. And if you're the Red Sox, I mean, they gave him, I think, $1.5 million, so this is what you're hoping for. He's a guy to dream on. I would say he's the sort of get back to the meat of your question, he might be where Margot was a year or so ago, where we're looking at Devers maybe 2 years down the road, he finally gets to Lowell or maybe even to low A, and then the performance starts to come along. More scouts have seen him, obviously. We get a better sense of what kind of approach he has at the plate, but it could be a real, an impact bat. I mean, that's the potential here, as a guy that's for plus power as he gets starts to fill out, but also generally has a good field of hitting, so he has enough ability to get to that power in game situations. He's, of all the guys in sort of the second tier for them, he's the exciting guy. I do like Stankiewicz. I think he's very interesting. I think he could be in their top 10 next year. I don't know that he has the ultimate upside of a top 100 guy, but he might be the player in the 11 to 20 range other than Margot who could make the biggest leap just in 2014 within my rankings, because I know the Red Sox just absolutely love the delivery, and he does have, they'll show you 3.5 to 4 pitches, depending on when you see him, with plenty of velocity that he holds really well. And sometimes those guys should bounce around a little bit in school and pitch for, he was in junior college. It wasn't necessarily an ideal coaching environment for him. You get him into a professional environment with better instruction, a guy like that can really take off very quickly just if he's in the right environment. I know the Red Sox were very excited that they got him where they got him, because they were one of the handful of teams that viewed him as a potential mid-rotation starter, where I think if you just saw him in junior college and just saw what was on the mound in those particular games, as opposed to trying to project a little, you would put him in as a reliever, just based on those looks.
Beautiful. Well, Keith, thank you so much for taking the time. I know I sent out a call on Twitter to see who people wanted to have on, and I was already in the process of trying to get you on the podcast, but you were the runaway winner of requests for getting you on.
Flattering.
I think people are over you being correct on Michael Bowden at this point, which I know you were the first one to kind of come out and say that he wasn't going to be a future number one, basically, and
right.
Everyone got it all up in it.
I will concede, I take very little pleasure in being right in that direction. I'd much rather be right when I'm the guy who says, I think Addison Russell is going to be a superstar, and hopefully he does turn out to be a superstar. Those are fun.
Yeah,
coming in and
yeah.
saying, he stinks. Carlos Carrasco was one for years. First, it's like, why do you hate the Phillies? Then he gets traded. Well, why do you hate Cleveland? I don't see it. Like, I watch the guy pitch. It's, what are you guys seeing that I'm not seeing? I don't get it. And then, you know, and then obviously he hasn't really turned out to be anything. And people are like, you were right on Carrasco. Well, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to go around like tweet? I was right on Carlos Carrasco. He's terrible.
Yeah.
Make me the worst person on Twitter. I don't want to end up on Olbermann's show where it's like, the worst person on the internet is Keith Law.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, yeah, and everyone, make sure you follow Keith on Twitter and at ESPN Insider. And I mentioned the podcast. The most recent episode had a great interview with Xander Bogaerts, who
awesome.
I think every time he opens his mouth, I think I like him more. I think our John Mioli from our site has an enormous man crush on him.
With good reason. Well,
yeah.
The accent alone, right?
Yes.
I mean, I see him talk all day. And I loved that he called me Mr. Keith Law.
Yes.
At least once during the thing he called. Thank you, Mr. Keith Law. I'm like, you're awesome. That's it. You're now my favorite prospect. All prospects should call me Mr. Keith Law, and I'll move
exactly.
you up on my rank.
And he's only like 20.
Yeah.
Amazing. My producer, when we hung up with him, my producer came on the line and said, he's only 20? Like, he spoke so well, so confidently, you would have thought he was 5 years older. And, by the way, speaks four languages. I don't know if English is second or his third, but to talk like that, in what is not probably not the language he grew up speaking, is absolutely incredible. And I can see now why the Red Sox are, I mean, they've just been raving about him since he was 17. This kid's makeup is completely off the charts. Yeah, I can see why now. I'm sold.
Mm-hmm. 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 Beautiful. Well, Keith, thanks so much, and we'll look forward to seeing you. You're in Delaware now, so I'm assuming you're going to see a lot of the Carolina League this year, right?
That's the plan. I mean, it's right. Wilmington, the Blue Rocks are right in my backyard. They're going to be loaded as it is with Mondesi and Bubba Starling, and I think both Manea and Dozier from last year's first round will start here, at least, if it ever stops snowing. And my plan is just, there's only eight teams in the league. Shame on me if I can't see the other seven as they come through. So if I'm not in Bristol, there's a pretty good chance I'll be down at the Blue Rocks Park.
Beautiful. Well, thanks so much, Keith. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that was our interview with Keith Law. Went very well. Keith was he's a working professional, man. He's got to take time out of his busy schedule to come on with us. So we appreciate that. Had some good insight. Would love to get him on again at some point, I would think.
Yeah, it was great. I wish we could have gone a little longer, but
yeah.
It's great insight. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks to Keith for coming on. Realize I didn't say any of this at the top of the show. You can obviously follow us at facebook.com/SoxProspects, on Twitter at Sox Prospects, and we'll go around. I'm at SP Chris Hatfield, and Matt.
I'm at Matt Hegel SP, and it's Hugel for my last name.
And Ian?
At Ian Cundall, IanCundall.
Beautiful. And then send us your questions. I think the next podcast that we do, hopefully, we'll get to some reader questions. You know, it's just tough where we do these interviews. We want to make sure the focus is on the interview. And I kind of like that this one isn't an hour and a half long, as we're wont to do sometimes. But yeah, send those emails to podcast@soxprospects.com. Again, that's podcast@soxprospects.com. And also make sure you rate and review us on iTunes. It really helps, gets the word out there, about the stuff we're doing here. So if you could throw us a rating and give us a comment, if you're going to give us a bad comment, maybe email me first and we can try and fix it. But
we can talk about it.
Yeah, we can talk it over. You know, it's all cool, man.
We're open to constructive criticism.
We are. Yeah. We are. Just, yeah. Unless it's bad. No, I'm kidding. Yes. Cool. So I think that that's about it for these two. I think, unless you guys have anything else to add, cries for help from under the snow, Matt, or...
Yeah, maybe in a couple hours, probably.
Yeah. But yeah, for these guys, for Matt and Ian, I'm Chris Hatfield. Thanks for downloading, and we will be back soon with another episode. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back.